taco night again at the Elliott Wolf household. It's Taco Tuesday.
Making taco pizza.
Wow, are you that basic that every Tuesday is Taco Tuesday?
No, I'm not that basic.
Okay, sorry.
I have tacos on any day of the week.
Just a basic haircut. Yeah.
Yeah, as basic as you can get, really. Look, Sat, we don't all work with the same facilities that your hair has.
Well, you had long hair. You act like you're going bald. You were going bald.
I wanted to get a lay of the land, you know? I turned 27, and I was like, you know what?
You see where the line
goes
now,
right? Where's the line?
You see where it is now.
I was worried it was further back than it is. I'm okay with where it's at.
Quickly before we get to Frank Saravalli, Gordy Locke texting in, loyal listener of the program. Reach, back to the Canucks. They're more interesting than Josh's hair. I don't know, man. Are they?
Have you seen my hair? Have you seen the Canucks?
So did Josh go to the barber or did his wife do it? What kind of trimmer does he have if it's a home job? The best part about this is Josh surprised his wife with a buzz cut.
Yeah.
That's
always a good call.
You know. He walked off the train and straight into the nearest barber shop. Like literally.
Yeah. It's at the train station, yeah. People are familiar with New Westminster.
He went to the barber and he's like, I want the cut that'll tell people I'm not gonna be pushed around.
People are taking me lightly at work lately.
This is Josh, you won't get this reference, but this was your David Beckham moment. Like when Bex did the buzz cut, it was like, what the hell?
Like
the guy with the nicest hair and all the football just got a buzz cut? What happened?
And there are people crying. Like, why would you do that to your hair?
It was pretty wild. I don't think it's getting that crazy in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, but...
Why did Josh cut his hair?
All right, it is Canuck Central this hour, brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less at Boston Pizza. Our next guest joins us on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries, and he is a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. It is Frank Saravalli. Thanks for this, Frank. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. It's the eve of the Stanley Cup final, and we get a rematch here. And you know, the thing I like about this, and why I think hockey fans are super into this, is like we know who the best two teams are in the National Hockey League right now. These two teams have proved it now over the last two seasons, even more for Florida. And like, there's no doubt going into this final who the best teams are for me, and that makes for the best stage possible if you're the NHL.
It really does kind of have an NBA Finals-like feel, right?
Yeah.
Like, typically in the NHL, the first round is the best round, and then the action kind of sloughs off a bit in rounds two, and then this year the conference final was probably as unentertaining as it's been.
Yeah.
And then you get this Titanic Stanley Cup final matchup that is a true heavyweight bout. And... honestly, I believe it's so incredibly close. I almost have a hard time, and I know funny things happen in series and in sports, but it almost feels like one of those series where I'll be floored if one team wins two games in a row. That's how close I think these teams are and evenly matched, that you're going to be looking for differences on the margin to try and find out who separates themselves and etches their name in history.
Does it come down to which team is healthiest?
It always does, right? I mean, think back to two seasons ago when the Panthers didn't have Matthew Tkachuk at full strength. Think back to last year when I think Connor McDavid, even though he won the Conn Smythe, was playing through a core muscle injury. Leon Draisaitl was kind of hobbled. It always seems to impact things, right, Sat?
Yeah, it certainly does. And that's why, like, as long as those two guys are healthy and they look healthy, they just look unstoppable to me this year almost.
Yeah, well, I could see where you're heading with that, but I do think that missing Zach Hyman is going to be big.
Mm-hmm.
His impact on the forecheck is immense. And we know that Matthew Tkachuk hasn't been as impactful as you could typically expect because he's still dealing with that groin injury from Four Nations. So I don't know if those two guys cancel each other out, but that for the most part, these two teams have kind of arrived at this moment generally no worse for wear as you get through a long, grueling playoff run.
Yeah, and both teams, like not that they didn't take the regular season seriously, but certainly they prioritized how healthy they were going to be for the start of their playoff runs more so than where they were positioned, right? Neither team had home ice advantage through the first three rounds. Florida won't have it here, which is different from last year. But, you know, these two teams, they knew how good they were, and they knew just making sure they were set up right for the postseason was more important than anything else.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Dan, because if you think about it in a different way, you said off the top that we have the two best, unequivocally the best teams in the league meeting for the second year in a row. And the amazing part about that is that both of them were picked, I don't know if it was by consensus, but many had the opposite team winning in the first round.
Yeah.
Tampa was a very trendy first round win. The Kings were thought of as a team that could maybe write a different story for the fourth year in a row facing the Oilers. And both teams kind of backed their way into the playoffs with some very average play down the stretch. And I think what it led to is a lot of recency bias when picking your bracket. Because I mean, hand up, like I had the Oilers beating the Kings, but losing to the Golden Knights.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the Stars beating the Oilers. And part of the reason is the recency bias that I saw against the Kings in round one. I was like, this team gift wraps goals. They beat themselves. And yet the Oilers have turned in an incredibly clean playoff run since dropping those first two games. And the Panthers, aside from a bit of a hiccup against the Leafs, haven't really blinked once all playoffs.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think back to that game three against the Leafs, down 3-1, down 2-0 in the series, and they never really looked back too hard after they were able to turn that one around. You know, the one of the backstory conversations going into this final is, you know, this idea that if Florida and other no-income tax states or teams in no-income tax states have this incredible advantage, and it is an advantage to a certain extent, but the reason I don't love that is, well, Edmonton's here for the second straight year, and two, like, Bill Zito's done an unbelievable job with this team over the last 3 years. I didn't see Florida in any Stanley Cup finals before Bill Zito showed up. It's not as simple as, like, well, that's the reason they've been able to build this juggernaut. It's helped them, but they finally got somebody in there that understood how to use it as an advantage.
It's not even that much of an advantage. Like, I just think that players want to go where they have an opportunity to win.
Yeah.
And Florida became that team once Matthew Tkachuk arrived. But think about what the last 10 years or 15 years have been like in the NHL and the teams that have won. The Chicago Blackhawks won 3 times, heavily taxed state. The LA Kings won twice. The Anaheim Ducks were a very popular choice for a long time, one of the most competitive teams in the league. I mean, if you go through the teams that have won and had an opportunity to do so, it hasn't been because of a tax advantage. And the only reason why people really want to go to Florida and go to Tampa, I mean, the tax part hasn't changed in decades. Why were the Panthers not a trendy pick 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Why were the Lightning not a trendy pick 15 years ago? It's because the team wasn't good, and sports are cyclical, and particularly in a salary cap era, you can't avoid it. The flip side is also true. If you would have said 15 years ago that some of the most uncompetitive teams in the league now are San Jose, Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston to a certain extent now moving forward, I mean, you're talking about some premier franchises that have fallen on some hard times. And it's not because of taxes. It's just because that's the cycle and how it works. What once was up is now down, and what once was down is now up.
Well, and, you know, as far as Zito is concerned, the Seth Jones trade is really working out massively for the Panthers. Yeah. He's playing 25 minutes a game. He's playing 2.5 minutes more than any other defenseman on that team. He's clearly the number one guy in the playoffs, and he even was when he came over after the trade, and we weren't even sure what Seth Jones kind of had left. I mean, what does that say about their ability to bring somebody in and also how great a fit he's been on that team? And I'm not sure we're talking enough about what Seth Jones has been doing these playoffs.
Well, that, and here's another wrinkle to it, is that Seth Jones, that was the only destination that he told the Chicago Blackhawks that he would consider a trade to.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some talk about Dallas, but Dallas was never really in the mix because they didn't have the cap space to be in the mix, so you just cross that one off the list. They weren't interested. And yeah, well, that's another thing that Bill Zito talked about today at Media Day here at the Cup Final. Was he had the ability to know Seth Jones from his time in Columbus together and knew the character of the player, how he would fit into the team, his abilities firsthand, obviously his weaknesses. And it's funny because with both of the defensemen in this series that have been, well, you could probably add in Jake Walman too, but I was going to say John Klingberg and Seth Jones. The funny thing about their acquisitions is that they were really initially panned by the fan bases. People were like, John Klingberg, are you kidding me? There's no chance he's going to make it. This isn't a guy that's going to help us win. And in Florida, they were like, ooh, look at Seth Jones' numbers through the first 2 weeks of arriving here. Man, he's really struggling. This guy has nothing left. Be careful, because those narratives have changed in a pretty big way.
Yeah, and Seth Jones, I mean, just in a really tough situation in Chicago and rediscovering his game that we saw all those years ago in Columbus. Frank Saravalli, our guest. So, silly season is
certain. I was going to say, Dan, to add one more thing quickly.
Yeah.
The fun part about Seth Jones for the Panthers is that that was exactly the type of guy that they were going to target in the summer to go spend their cap space on. And now they've done it. They've acquired him. They get us another Stanley Cup, and they get to keep him for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and it looking pretty good at the number they've got him to with what Chicago retained on that contract as well. So silly season is heating up here. You know, the NHL draft combine is starting up in Buffalo as the Stanley Cup final gets going in Edmonton this week. And all the speculation is like, hey, maybe the table's going to get set for some deals here, as you know, this is the time that front offices are actually all congregated in the same place in Buffalo with the draft combine ahead of the decentralized draft later this month. Do you expect trade speculation to pick up even more than where it's been the last few days?
I do. I think it already has. I think, look, when you get these decision makers and agents in the same room for coffee, for dinner, for whatever it might be, and you get the ability for teams themselves and front offices to meet up and compare notes, it's bound to ramp up. And so I think some of the things that we've sort of heard already, there's been lots of speculation about the Dallas Stars and Jason Robertson. And in fact, I'll add in not combine related, but there's still plenty of buzz at this hour that the Stars are considering making a coaching change. There's been talk about the Colorado Avalanche and defenseman Samuel Girard and center Charlie Coyle. And there's already been talk about some of the top five picks in this draft that I think there's a real possibility in a, you know, in a time in which so few top five picks end up getting moved, that this could be a draft that you could see one of them be traded, whether it's Chicago, whether it's San Jose, whether it's Utah. I think there's a lot of teams that are willing to entertain a thought of, in this different draft where beauty is in the eye of the beholder, that we could see some real movement in this draft as opposed to others.
It's been a really long time since we've seen a top five pick, but when we had Bill Armstrong on the show, GM of the Utah Mammoth, he didn't shy away from the idea of potentially moving the fourth overall pick. It's obviously, going to have to take a pretty monumental player, a pretty significant player, a young player that he would add to his group. But, you know, from a Canucks viewpoint of that, it's like, well, if you've got other teams that have been collecting all these assets here that are going after the same kinds of players you might be going after this summer, trade prices could get pretty high in what's going to be a seller's market.
They could. But I think it also depends on, in terms of an interest level, Dan, would be what is the view of the quality of player that you're going to get in that top five spot. I think we all sort of are programmed to think top five equals franchise player. And I think you're going to get an impact player, but I don't know that they're going to be a franchise player. And I think there's probably a distinction to be made there.
Right, which makes more sense as to why those picks might be available this year as opposed to not being available in other years. And, you know, silly season also means sometimes certain names come up that make you kind of raise an eyebrow a little bit. And sometimes those end up being true. You mentioned some names that are interesting. We even heard notions of perhaps Jason Robertson or even Martin Natchez being out there. Now, those players, if they become available, they become guys, obviously, that would come with a pretty big price tag.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, look, both those teams are in really interesting spots, Dallas and Colorado. The Stars don't have a ton of cap flexibility. And if after losing 3 years in a row in the Western Conference Final, they have or want to make some changes, their ability or path to do so is somewhat limited. So they're going to have to be a little bit creative to get there. What are you also doing with Jamie Benn, your captain, and Matt Duchene, who's been playing on a bargain deal, had an 82-point season, and is looking for some security and stability with his next deal? So Robertson is a pretty natural name after a down and then up, very up season. And then in Colorado, after falling short in the first round, you have to at some point commit to and pay Marty Natchez, which is why the Carolina Hurricanes were willing to move on. You've got Coyle, who was an okay fit, but I think one of the lasting images of the playoffs for the Avs is him getting screamed at by Nathan MacKinnon. And then you've also got an undersized piece on your blue line where you struggled with depth in Sam Girard that you've, you know, is he part of the solution or is he part of the problem? And I'm not saying he's part of the problem. I'm just saying that's a question that the Avs need to ask themselves as they try and figure out what's next.
Well, you mentioned the Stars and Pete DeBoer. Is he gaining a reputation of being a guy who just can't get his team over the hump, which seems unfair considering he's been to, what, six of the last seven conference finals in the West?
Well, I'd say two things. One is he has definitely earned the reputation of running hot. I think the way that he managed both the Ottinger situation and also sort of the rocket that he threw his team before their season-ending game against their elimination game against the Oilers when he said, coaches don't score goals. And that was a direct indictment of his team, and it's not necessarily wrong, but if you take those two things and you smash them together, you can understand why his room might be frustrated with his stance and approach. And then the next part of that, it's related, unrelated, because you have a coach that sometimes runs hot. Is that a situation that has prevented them from getting over the hump? It's great that you've been to six of seven conference finals, but what would the odds be that you would get there and not have one Stanley Cup victory in that time? What's, you know, you could ask the same question before about Paul Maurice. Why hasn't he gotten over the hump? He's been to three Stanley Cup finals. Why hasn't he won one? But, and maybe it just takes that one time to break through. But I think at this point in time for the Dallas Stars, given the way that it ended, everything should be on the table.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, there's a lot of hard feelings, and I get it when it comes to what how Pete DeBoer handled it. Some of it was true, but maybe a little too honest publicly for what players might appreciate. the Yanni Gourde contract yesterday, 6 years, two and change from the Tampa Bay Lightning. We saw a similar thing with the Leafs and Chris Tanev last year in unrestricted free agency. I know, you know, there's going to be talk about the CBA tomorrow when Gary Bettman does his State of the Union address before the Stanley Cup final begins. And we know that the CBA is likely close to getting done and that a lot of speculation has some changes coming to the LTIR ruling. Do you think some of these contracts we might look back on differently if rules change to the LTIR stipulations that are currently in place?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it hasn't been outside of the NHL's realm to go back and retroactively think about that differently.
Vancouver knows very well. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I think we arrived at an interesting point with this Yanni Gourde contract, which to me is like as close as you can come to salary cap circumvention without actually stepping over the line. Mm-hmm. Like, does anyone actually think that Yanni Gourde's going to be a productive player at age 39?
No. And no disrespect to him, but he had 7 goals this year. He's had a lot of injuries. It's tough to imagine that he's still a productive player at that age.
He was already slowing down and already banged up, and then you give him a 6-year deal?
Yeah.
All you're doing, we can all see it. Like, let's call it for what it is. You're artificially lowering the cap number mm-hmm. by providing more years. You basically just sat down and said to him, okay, you're a free agent. We want you to stay. You want to be here. What's the total number of dollars that you need in order to make that happen?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. You want $20 million? All right. We're going to take that and spread it over 6 years instead of 3 so that we can chop the AAV in half. And if you don't play the last couple years because you're wink, wink, hurt, I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
Or let's say you actually can't do it. Don't worry. We'll just put you on LTIR or we'll put you on waivers and put you in the minors and you'll get all of your money.
Well, it goes against the spirit of the league, just as they argued for against Luongo. It goes against the spirit of the rule, right? Yeah. But, I mean, we'll see. The NHL and inconsistencies go hand in hand when it comes to things like this. Quickly on the Canucks. The Canucks do seem very confident they are going to make a trade at some point here, and perhaps even as soon as the Cup final ends. Do we have any sense of who they might be talking to and being close with? Because it seems pretty quiet from a team that is being very aggressive.
Not yet. I think they're probably still in some fact-finding mode. Like, mm-hmm. look, we know that they are just putting some finishing touches on their coaching staff with the addition of Kevin Dean and Adam Foote is giving a good methodical process to it, but also providing, I'm sure, some input to the front office staff saying, here's what I'm thinking. Here's the way I'd like to do this. Here's the way I'd like our team to play. How can we find players that mesh with both my vision and yours?
Frank, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this. Enjoy the Stanley Cup final.
Of course. Have a great week and we'll talk to you soon.
There is Frank Saravalli joining us here on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Frank joins us on Sports at 650 and he's brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Members of the Plus program, save more at Angry Otter Liquor. This month, save extra on neutral vodka soda and hey, all 12 packs. Find more at Angry Otter Liquor. Interesting there from Frank Saravalli. Not a ton on the Canucks right now, but the calm before the storm, it feels like, before a flurry of transactions, we hope, across the National Hockey League.
Yeah. I mean, the Canucks have been busy. Right? Yes. They signed Derek Forbert.
Yes.
Today, they're still filling out their coaching staff.
Yep.
But the fact that there isn't a lot of buzz around the Canucks and specific names, is that a sign of the Canucks being quiet, as in like they don't have a lot going on, or is that a sign of the Canucks actually doing some work and it's not getting out?
Mm. Well, I mean, you can look at it a couple of ways. Like when they got Zadorov and Lindholm, there was a lot of noise about those. Yeah. You know, everybody knew that they were in on those guys, but when they got Hronek, that one came out of nowhere.
Yeah, even Marcus Pedersen, when that trade happened after the trade of a JT, that kind of came out.
We barely even digested the JT trade. They were like, we got Marcus Pedersen.
Well, yeah, it was funny because we got the info. We were on air when the Pedersen trade happened, and we ended up actually leaving the station. And then came back 2 minutes later because the trade happened as soon as the show ended. And we came back and did an extra hour that day. And I remember getting a text saying, and this is like as we stayed till like 8 o'clock, and one saying like, yeah, there might be another move coming. I'm like, another move?
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, well, I guess they're flipping the pick already. And it happened within hours.
Yes. So I guess it goes both ways. But I think back to just how confident Jim Rutherford was with us that they are going to be able to get something done. And I can't get away from that. You know,
yeah, I know.
Even at the end of the season, they talk like they know that what they're going to get or how they're going to get it, and it just it's just a matter of time before it gets done. Remember what Jim Rutherford said on this show, and we may not have any cap space by the time July 1st rolls around. So
yeah, and no, you're right, and you know it's interesting too because we asked Frank, and it's like nothing specific about who he's lined up with. And we talked last week about how, or I think, well, yeah, it was last. Was it yesterday or last? Days kind of blend together, but that don't be surprised if it's a name out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of lines up with it being quiet,
yeah.
You know, and sometimes when they're close to something, you don't quite hear. So I wonder what's going on with the team, but they are very confident something's going to happen. And you're right. I don't think this is something that's going to drag into, you know, early July or after the draft. It's going to get done before.
It's Dan Riccio, Sat TR Shaw. Coming up, let's tee up the Stanley Cup Final. George Richards and Tyler Yaremchuk are going to give us the story from Edmonton on the eve of Game 1. That's next on Canuck Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Sat TR Shaw. Hour number two is brought to you by BC Liquor. Until June 28th, save $6 on eccentric Cabernet Sauvignon and Coors Light 24 packs. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and always enjoy responsibly. Stanley Cup Final begins tomorrow. Edmonton hosting Game 1 against the Florida Panthers, a rematch of last year where the Panthers took it in 7 games. Let's start to preview it. George Richards, Florida Hockey Now, at George Richards on Twitter, joining us. Thanks for this, George. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. What's going on?
We're getting ready, man. You know, like from as I mentioned earlier in the show, like from a neutral hockey fan's perspective, two best teams are in the final. There's little doubt about that. It was a great final last year, especially towards the end of it when Edmonton made its way back into the series. And I'm honestly only expecting better this year from an entertainment perspective.
Yeah, last year, I mean, it's going to be hard to top, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Florida's up 3-0. They're talking about the cups in the building, and you know Paul Maurice can't sleep the night before. And next thing you know, it's Game 7, and they're on the verge of the biggest choke job in pro sports history.
Well, and you know, it's you know from your perspective, George, it's got to be interesting too because now you're at 3 straight finals, and yes, this organization had been to the finals in '95-'96, only the third year of their existence. But you know, this organization only made the playoffs what was it 3 times in a 20-year stretch between '98 and 2018. Like, it's got to be quite the different. How different is the organization in your day to day looking at the team now versus that 20-year stretch where they only made the playoffs 3 times?
Yeah, I mean, the big difference is the media coverage of it. You know, at the end of my run at the Miami Herald, we had to fight, to go to Tampa for a game or fight for coverage in it because it was just like, what are we doing here? I mean, what's going on? The team finally makes the playoffs, and then the next year they've got the number 2 overall pick because they finished in last. And, you know, then they have a break. You know, they break the team up after one playoff run. And it was just, you know, it was frustrating. And then the crowd, and then you know, the local interest in it was just not there because there was no reason for it to be there. I mean, it was just brutal. And now you look at it and there's Panther stuff all over town. You know, you can't walk around the locker room because every TV station in town has 2 crews here, not just 1, but 2. And, yeah, I mean, everybody is, you know, jumped on, and you know, we kind of always talked about it. This team could just win, not just one year, but consistently. You know, this would be a market that would be all right. Gary Bettman, you know, was kind of banking on that this market's so big that as long as you run it right, you know, the fans will be there, and they've definitely shown up.
I loved Bill Zito's line today when asked about the no income tax in the state of Florida and how that's an advantage. And he just talked about how ownership is the biggest advantage, and how,
yeah,
you know, they know if the chicken isn't right that we're going to get new chicken. It was just a great line, because you see it in sports, especially the big four across North America. You know, it starts at the top and on down, and that's kind of the story of this iteration of the Florida Panthers, as you just mentioned. That's where it started, getting the ownership group committed, and it trickles on down to more success onto the ice.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way they treat the players. That word gets around. You know, and back in the old days, it got around how cheap the Panthers were. If they played a game in Vancouver, they didn't stay the night. They flew the red eye home to save the money on the hotels. You know, the training facility wasn't great. Now there's nothing that these players want for, and word does, you know, players talk, right? I mean, the players talk, and guys want to play here. The weather's great, you no doubt about it, and players are taking probably a little less because, you know, an $8 million contract in Florida is $9 million somewhere else. And, you know, that's a fourth line winger for the Panthers when they sign that $8 million deal. So the tax thing is a thing, but it was never, ever, ever brought up back in the day when the Panthers were overpaying for a fourth line winger and, you know, giving him $3 million because that was the only way to get him.
Well, and it seems like everything Bill Zito touches turns to gold right now, whether it's signing some free agents, the cheap guys coming in having success, or even making trades, and Brad Marchand being, you know, the big acquisition that got people talking. But Seth Jones has maybe been the most impactful trade he's made this year, Bill Zito, and looking at him playing 25 minutes a game, you get to see him in practice, you get to talk to him after games, after practices as well. How well is he fitting in, and how big of an impact are you seeing on the ice from him?
Yeah, he's been a big impact, and obviously that was a huge trade when it went down. Obviously, the Marchand thing a week later at the deadline was the headline grabber, right? That's the one everybody talks about, and Marchand has been absolutely terrific since he's come back from injury, and he's fit in like a glove. But Seth Jones, you know, the Panthers' plan for him was to be their number two right-handed defenseman behind Aaron Ekblad, and you know, maybe take some of the responsibilities away that he was, you know, maybe bogged down with in Chicago, happened to be the guy. And then 2 games later, Aaron Ekblad gets a 20-game suspension, and hey, all right, Seth, I guess you're back in the spotlight. And he had to learn the Panther system on the fly. He had to make his mistakes, you know, right out there in the open. And he got through that extremely well. And you look at him now, and it looks like, just like, you know, like Bill Zito said about Marchand, you feel like he's been here 10 years. And you feel like Seth Jones has always kind of been a part of this. And it's only been a couple months. But, no, he's been terrific. And, you know, he's settled in, and he's playing with Nico McCullough, and he's on the top power play with Ekblad, two defensemen on the top of the power play, and everything seems to be working just right.
Do you agree with Paul Maurice's assessment that both of these teams are better today than they were 12 months ago?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. I mean, you can definitely say that about Edmonton. One of the question marks about the Oilers last year was their defense. They're definitely better in that regard. Florida seems deeper, even though, you know, they looked pretty deep last year with the way that they had run that fourth line. And you know, they both look like they are primed for this, right? You look at the respective conference finals, and aside from one period, right? I mean, Edmonton dominated Dallas. And aside from one game, Florida dominated Carolina. So they're both coming in riding a high. They both have about the same amount of rest. And yeah, this one should be a barn burner.
Well, it's really interesting to me that the conversation around Matthew Tkachuk, because he has 5 goals in 17 games, 16 points. And last year in the playoffs, he had 6 goals and they won the Stanley Cup and he had 22 points. So scoring wise, it's not too dissimilar, but we see the physicality isn't quite there. What have you seen from him? And do you think he has a little extra juice left here for the Cup final, and whether that's going to make a difference or not, him not being at 100%?
Yeah, listen, everybody's amped up about playing in the final, and he knows what the cost is here. And I would not be surprised. I mean, I haven't heard this from anybody, but, you know, if Matthew Tkachuk needs some sort of surgery in the off season and maybe misses some time, that's of no concern right now, right? You're playing for the Stanley Cup, and he knows what that felt like last year, and he talked about it in August. He was like, you know, I thought if you won it once, you're set for life and that's it, baby. And he goes, now I get it. You want to get it again. We do not want to give this cup up. So he's going to give the Panthers whatever it is he's got. He's going to give it. And he's not hampering anything by any means. But yeah, you can tell he's just not blowing people up in the corners the way he was. And you know, we'll have to see what happens after that. But yeah, Aaron Matthew Tkachuk certainly is going to bring it down for these final games.
George, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for this today.
Anytime. See you guys.
There he is, George Richards, Florida Hockey Now, Panthers insider, joining us as we tee up the Panthers side of things on tomorrow's game one of the Stanley Cup final. You know, one of the things that stands out when you look at the numbers from last year, Sat, and it comes to Sasha Barkov, obviously, the Selke Trophy winner. But last year, in the minutes that he played against Connor McDavid, it was 1-1 at 5-on-5. Barkov against McDavid, and against Leon Draisaitl, it was 3-1 at 5-on-5 in favor of the Florida Panthers. So, you know, to me, that's the biggest story of the series is can McDavid and Draisaitl have a little bit more success against Sasha Barkov this year?
Well, and we'll talk to Tyler here in a second. Are they both healthier this year? And if they are, does it make it a bit harder for Barkov, regardless of how good he is defensively?
Let's bring in our next guest, Tyler Yaremchuk of Oilers Nation and Daily Faceoff. Thanks for this, Tyler. He joins us on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Is that for you one of the big keys of this series? Can McDavid and Draisaitl have a little bit, it sounds crazy, can they have a little bit more success against Sasha Barkov than they did a year ago?
Yeah, I think that's a really big part of it. And part of it will be both of them getting going, because I think what we saw last year was Connor McDavid had some juice left in him in the Stanley Cup final. You know, he ended up having 11 points in the series, and even though he was held off the board in Game 7, he's the reason why that series even ended up going to 7 games. Connor McDavid was unbelievable. Leon Draisaitl didn't score a single goal in the Stanley Cup final, and I know he never admitted it, but there's a lot of people who will tell you he probably did suffer some sort of an arm or upper body injury in the series against the Vancouver Canucks last year. That really wore down on him in the Western Conference Final, and he just didn't have his shot in the Stanley Cup Final. This time around, he, by all accounts, is 100%. There's nothing ailing him. He's playing great hockey right now, and you can talk about one of those two having to be better than Sasha Barkov, but my point would be if they're both going, Sasha Barkov can't be playing against both of them, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I just look at this Edmonton team, them being healthier, especially McDavid and Draisaitl. That's always one of the biggest factors when it comes to the Cup final. Like, you know, obviously, like which team is healthier, but especially at this type of level. And the fact you're getting Evander Kane, who's a big power forward, he's coming in healthy and playing well too. And I know losing Hyman is tough, but I almost feel like having Kane be healthy and play the way he has mitigates it to some degree.
Yeah, and again, this layer of depth the Oilers have added, and it's not just, you know, names that you recognize, it's guys that are playing really, really well. I think that's a massive difference maker, too. You go back to last year, Sam Carrick played a game in the Stanley Cup Final. Derek Ryan played a bunch of games, but was averaging like 6 minutes and 30 seconds of time on ice or something ridiculous like that. And it was like, okay, they had to keep throwing Evander Kane out there, even though he wasn't at 100% in last year's final, because they just didn't have anything else. And now you look, like with Connor Brown expected to make his return, one of Victor Arvidsson or Jeff Skinner have to sit out. Like, there's still a quality player sitting on the sideline every single night for the Edmonton Oilers. And even if you want to go a little bit deeper than that, they have some young players who could still probably jump in and make an impact. Like, there's so much depth here that even if someone is showing some signs of wear and tear, they can just kind of do the next man up thing. They can go to Skinner. They can go to Arvidsson. They can try to go 11-7 if they needed to, because Troy Stetcher has been so good when they've needed him in these playoffs. The depth makes it so much easier to overcome the Zach Hyman thing, because the other side is you're not just looking at Evander Kane and going, oh, man, he better fill that void that Zach Hyman's leaving. It's like, no, it could be Kane. It could be Frederick. It could be Connor Brown, Henrik, Arvidsson. There's so many different guys who could step up.
Well, and on defense, they're a little bit deeper and different, too, because you've got Jake Walman and obviously John Klingberg, and both have played big roles so far here in the playoffs. And last year, so much depended on Ekholm and Bouchard. And I think it's just a little bit deeper. Everybody's a little bit better. And especially when it comes to Walman and Klingberg in this series, you know, they're guys that can move the puck pretty well, and that's something that you're going to have against the heavy forecheck of the Panthers.
Yeah, I think the puck moving ability from the blue line, defense, offense, goaltending, that's the biggest difference from last year to this year for the Oilers. And, I mean, just look at the players that Walman and Klingberg are replacing from a year ago. Yes, Broberg was getting into games, but, like, one of Desharnais or CeCe still had to be in the lineup every night. And those two guys, their biggest problem is successfully moving the puck out of their own end. Walman and Klingberg do it really, really well, not just average, but are like above average or really good at it. And with this Florida team being as physical and as hard as they are on the forecheck, getting the puck to Edmonton's skilled forwards in stride with speed, that's their biggest path to victory here. Mm-hmm. Florida can hit and do whatever they want in the offensive zone, but if Edmonton's two touches and out and going back the other way, going to be hard for Florida to get their offense going. So yeah, the mobility, the puck moving of Edmonton's blue line, last year it was a problem. This year it's a legitimate strength.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that also deserves a lot of credit is how well they deploy these players. And we know Walman and Klingberg can have some difficulties in their own zone, so they get lots of offensive zone starts. So does Evan Bouchard. It just seems like you seldom see those guys in positions where their weaknesses are being taken advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you said Evan Bouchard. I've been so impressed with him again mm-hmm. in this postseason. He really elevated last year from the offensive side of things, and the numbers he was putting up were just absolutely ridiculous. And this year, the numbers are still there, but all of a sudden he's become one of Edmonton's best and most reliable penalty killers. And there were a lot of people who in the past would have just pointed to the Matthias Ekholm thing and just said, oh, well, he needs Ekholm there because otherwise he's drowning and he can't play a 5-on-5 and he's bad defensively. And with Ekholm out, Bouchard kind of just put up his hand and was like, you know what? I can be a number one defenseman. I don't need the grizzled vet on my side. And Brett Kulak's very, very good. I'm not trying to diminish what he brought to that pairing, but it was very clear who the driver was. And I love that Evan Bouchard just once again kind of silenced his haters here and said, like, yeah, you don't need to staple me with someone. I don't need to be babysat. I can handle a tough number one assignment all on my own. And he's done exactly that.
The other, the part of the Panthers that I find fascinating is that third line that's had so much success this postseason. Having Brad Marchand on the third line, like, what are you, Team Canada? This is crazy. It's such a luxury that they have. How do the Oilers deal with the depth of the Florida forward group that they have, especially with that third line that's had so much success and has really beaten a couple of teams in these last couple of series?
It's one of the bigger mismatches in this series, and I think how Chris Knobloch decides to handle it is going to be fascinating. I think even with the D pairings he goes up against them, like, I don't think you can do Walman and Klingberg against how smart that Marchand, Luukkonen, and Lundell line mm-hmm. is. So how do you kind of mix it up? I think we might see a lot of moments where they don't play McDavid and Draisaitl with the Bouchard and Ekholm pairing and try to really just line match Bouchard and Ekholm on that third line and just try to negate things that way. But the biggest mismatch in this series, I mean, on one hand, you could say it's Edmonton's star power, but it's Florida's third line compared to Edmonton's bottom six. Like, Henrik, Brown, and Frederick are the trio we believe for game one who are going to be on the third line. But, man, they'll have their hands full. Like, it's an area where it's the Stanley Cup final. Every game's going to be decided by, in all likelihood, a bounce or two. And that mismatch on the third line has a pretty good chance of giving them the bounce or two.
Chris Knobloch has been so impressive. And I remember thinking back to the series against Vancouver last year, and you know, when the Canucks took the lead, and all of a sudden Knobloch starts making some subtle changes and sudden adjustments, and it really, really had a big impact on the rest of that series. And obviously, as we know, the Oilers took it over at the end of it. But he's continued that even through these playoffs. Like, he's just, he makes subtle adjustments, and I think that's, it's big for any coach, but he's really, it almost feels like a part of his repertoire that I don't think enough coaches have across the league.
Yeah, I mean, just go look at the Oilers' record in games 4 through 7 of a playoff series under Chris Knobloch. It's sparkling. It's like, it's near perfect, and I think that's a testament. Like, if it happens once or twice, you can maybe say, oh, he got lucky. Now that it's happened in, you know, 6-7 series, it's like, okay, no, there's something to this. And look at what he did against Vegas. You know, they lost a game on home ice. They were still up 2-1. I think a lot of coaches would have said, hey, what I'm doing has gotten me to a 2-1 lead. I'm not worried. But no, he goes and makes the tough decision. He pulls out Victor Arvidsson. He puts in Kasperi Kapanen because he realizes he needs more speed, more physicality. Kapanen comes in up to the second line. One of their best forwards in the final two games against Vegas gets the OT winner to finish off the series. So the way he's not afraid to mess with things, even if they're not in a back against the wall type of situation, that's really impressive to me. He's a really, really smart coach. He's now out-coached some guys who are generally considered some of the best in the league. And I think it's about time that Chris Knobloch's in that conversation as a top five head coach in the NHL.
Yeah, I'm with you about, you know, what credit he deserves for how good a job he has done behind the bench with that team. I did want to ask you about Stuart Skinner. Has he figured it out?
I mean, the second you start saying Stuart Skinner's figured it out, he reminds you that he doesn't have it figured out. But like, in all honesty, I've been a massive Stuart Skinner backer kind of this whole season, as a bunch of the fan base and media have kind of jumped on him and said the Oilers need a solution between the pipes. I kind of remind everyone he's, you know, 25, 26 years old. There's growing pain sometimes. He's not a Jake Oettinger, an elite goalie, whoever. He's not just going to be able to jump in and be a number one goalie right from the get-go and just be dominant, Vezina level, whatever words you want to use. Like, he is going to have some learning pains. He's having to learn on the fly because in his first couple of years in the NHL, he's had to be a workhorse number one who's taking a Stanley Cup contender or expected to take a Stanley Cup contender on playoff runs. So, like, the growing pains were expected, and I've always pointed to when he is on, his ceiling is so high. Look at the goalies he's gone up against the last two rounds, and Hill and Oettinger, and quite honestly outdueled those two guys who we all consider to be top 10 premier NHL goalies. So again, you're always a little bit hesitant because you don't know when Stuart Skinner is going to lose his fastball and everything's going to, you know, fall apart around him. But for right now, I mean, the fact it's not just been a couple of games against Dallas where you go, ooh, he was really good. It's now a bunch of games against Vegas, and on top of that, a whole series against Dallas where you go, wow, he's been spectacular. That's got to give the Oilers some level of confidence. But like with every team, how you play in front of Stuart Skinner, or how the Oilers play in front of Stuart Skinner, dictates how his game goes, right? Like, if they're giving up two-on-ones and breakaways, and, you know, he's a bigger guy, if he has to go these 1.5, 2-minute runs where he's moving post to post, tracking play because the Oilers are hemmed in, that's where he starts to slow down. That's where he stops being able to move laterally and make those big saves. The Oilers need to be quick at getting pucks out of their own end, not let the Panthers wear down Stuart Skinner, and they'll set their goalie up for success.
Tyler, we really appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this, and enjoy the Cup Final.
Yep, thanks, guys.
There he is, Tyler Yaremchuk, Oilers Nation Daily Faceoff, joining us, guests on Sports at 650. Call in on the hotline, powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. It's fascinating matchup going into this final.
Who do you have?
I have the Oilers.
Yeah.
I know it's an unpopular pick in this market. Jeffro reminding us that he hopes Sasha Barkov shuts down McDavid and Draisaitl yet again. And others saying, well, they do have, like, you know, the winner of the Selke Trophy and the runner-up that they can use to shut down those two guys.
Well, they should be happy because you might be jinxioing.
Yeah, I might be jinxioing the Edmonton Oilers.
Here, didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
it's
maybe
over
it works
four.
Out well.
Yeah.
Edmonton in six is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I was going to say Edmonton in six, but I'll say it's Edmonton in seven.
Okay.
I'm going Panthers in six.
Panthers in six, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not about...
You cut your hair like Sasha Barkov, so you got to do it.
Exactly. He's my guy.
Like, to me, like, I don't pick based on what I want to see happen, is what I think is going to happen. And I don't know, I just get the sense with McDavid, Draisaitl being healthy, I know they're losing Hyman, and this can change, right? Because health is a fickle thing. It can change in a moment, right? And McDavid did miss practice the other day and left early, so we'll see if he's 100% or not. But if those guys are close to healthy and the blue line's looking a little bit better, Evander Kane, I think, honestly, I keep bringing him up, but I think it makes a big difference, man. Yeah. You have a guy who can play a power game who's healthy. You lose Hyman. Like, I know you lost Hyman, but you didn't have Kane last year, really, because he was playing like he was essentially a ghost with how broken up he was. And he's playing really well. Nugent Hopkins has been playing really well. Like,
they had to stop playing Kane in the final.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's just like, he couldn't move.
He couldn't move. He wasn't, Draisaitl obviously didn't score. He was really hurt. We saw that starting to happen against the Vancouver Canucks. So it's just like, it's different. And that's one of the things that I love about this final and how it's setting up. Like, we know they're the two best teams. And yeah, there's some injuries on both sides. Kachuk's not fully healthy. Mm-hmm. Hyman's out. But, like, relatively, you know, these teams are more upright than what we usually see come the Stanley Cup
final. Yeah, and, you know, styles make fights. You have two. I will say there are actually some similarities. I mean, most teams, again, don't play too dissimilar, right, as far as, like, how they go about things. Yeah,
I feel like a lot of coaches would love to play like the Florida Panthers do, but they just don't have the talent to do it.
Exactly. But the thing they have in their advantage, and I know people have texted this in, it's like, well, they have the Selke winner and they have the Selke runner-up as well.
Yeah.
Because Reinhardt also had got some really good... Now, that's just how they play. And they have Marchand, who's also a really good two-way player. So they might mitigate what I'm about to say, but one thing Edmonton has shown in these playoffs is that their peak is higher than anybody else's.
Yeah.
The thing that makes the Panthers so good is because they can minimize that because of how well they play defensively, but... I just wonder if Edmonton can torque it up to that level, does that give them the edge overall in the series? And that's how I see it.
When the Panthers get going, and they are, they've done it a few times in these playoffs, but they are just so smothering.
Yeah.
And I do think the Oilers are going to have to try and find ways to work against that, but they're just so deep. They're going to have moments where they put you under a ton of pressure and you've really just got to be able to weather the storm as best you can.
Well, and the thing, and they're so relentless and mean. You saw what they did against Carolina. They had the lead and they're still bullying them, you know, in games. And that's how they're going to go about things. Like, they're not going to let you off the hook at all. Like, if they see a weakness in you, they're going to keep pressing that until you give up, essentially.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. It can be frustrating if it's against your team, but it is fun to watch from a neutral perspective. We'll talk more about this. Get to more of your texts. 650, final segment of Canuck Central coming up on Sportsnet 650.